Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian media. Visit rabble.ca/donate to contribute.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio, free radio.
Hi, and welcome to Gooder Goods, a podcast about conscious consumption. I'm Kelly Okamura, and I'd like to share with you my long journey from front row fashionista to shopping in my closet as a trendsetter. We're all consumers who wear clothes. And as a professional in the purchasing system, my spending spree has taught me a lot about why clothes matter and why all of us need to think twice before we mindlessly make our next purchase. And hopefully before we wreck our planet for the sake of a bargain that we thought was too good of an opportunity to miss out on.
I'm super glad I braved a winter storm to celebrate the naming of the Mind Bomb Room at the annex location of the Centre for Social Innovation in Toronto. It was named in honour of Bob Hunter, legendary founder of Greenpeace, who coined the term. The event was a revival of the CSI's 6 Degrees of Separation Social, and not only did I talk with Bob's wife, Bobby, but also his daughter, Emily Hunter, who, like me, has been a member of the center since we only had a single location. There are now 4 locations, including one in New York, and even though I was not able to get weekend access to CSI in New York to do an interview with my old friend, Sass Brown, I got the interview in. And I planted my mind bomb of flourishing fashion in New York with impact. Sass is the Associate Dean at the Fashion Institute of Technology, and I've watched her fashion journey with great interest since she left Toronto to teach one course at the school many years ago. I first knew Sass as a fashion designer when she came to Canada from London, where she was raised and schooled after her family went back to the UK. And as a conscious consumer who shops in her closet, several of her designs still give me great pleasure when I wear them, including the fluffy white mohair sweater that I wore for our interview.
Hi, I'm speaking with Sass Brown of Eco Fashion Talk. Sass and I have known each other for so long that I remember when she was a casino girl, but she's been a designer, the fashion director of a fast fashion brand, an educator, and now she's a fashion activist. So when did you start Eco Talk Fashion?
Eco Fashion Talk, gosh. It came out of my master's, and I'm drawing a blank on what year that was, but it was a good number of years ago. My master's, I ended up making every project within it. The master's was in global fashion management. It was nothing to do with ethics or sustainability or even really necessarily related to fashion. It was more to do with fashion systems, but just within the degree, I managed to focus every project on sustainable fashion. And so at the end of that, I had so much material that my first book came out of it, which is Eco Fashion. And for whatever reason, just because I always like being trouble, I guess, I decided that I wanted to do, instead of a proper thesis at the end of my master's, I would do a blog. And so that's where the website came from too. So it all grew out of just things that happened, not really a plan, as it seems to be the case in my life.
So would you say that your journey from fashion director of a big fashion, fast fashion brand came in a natural way? How did you end up in eco?
God, synchronistically, organically, I think. I mean, I think personally, I'd like to think I always had a conscience. Certainly when I had my own brand, there were a number of things I did that were, before there was any sort of terminology for it, you know, whether it was simple as recycling my fabric scraps to kids' schools, craft, classes or to paper makers that could upcycle it into paper, recycling paper waste from pattern making. So I always kind of did those things automatically, but some of those are a natural outgrowth of being an emerging designer and saving your pennies and making friends, and hence why many emerging designers are so much more ethically conscious than big brands. So I guess I always had that conscience, but I was in a mainstream industry most of my design career, both back in the UK and in Canada. But, you know, fashion has its share of characters, mean people, divas, princesses. It's not always the easiest industry to work in. And people tend to get burned out and tired. And that was the case with me in many ways. I just got sick of it. And it happened to come at a time when I was looking to do a move. I got the offer to teach a single class in New York, and that allowed me to move to New York. And education opened up entirely new worlds to me that were minimized and negated in the corporate space, and really just allowed me the freedom to consider what my ethics were and to explore them and to grow them. And so it sort of happened through that.
Well, Sass, I would think of you as one of the leading voices in this area on sustainable fashion. But the two of us happen to mention that both of us are not comfortable with the word fashion.
Well, I you know, I mean, I'm not... I love fashion. I'm very much interested in fashion. What I don't like is the mainstream industry. I don't like the system of fashion. I don't like the supply chain of fashion. I don't like quite a few people in fashion, or at least in the mainstream. But there are incredible things happening in this, in the alternative space, whether it's from activism, whether it's material usage, whether it's supply chain, circular economy, technology, biology, all kinds of really great stuff that's happening. Also with some characters, but most of them really cool characters and not the sort of divas and princesses that you're used to seeing with in the mainstream industry. So I love fashion, but I have a different perspective, I guess, than what I used to. I'm not interested in trends that go out of style in a few months' time or are old news as soon as they're available on the street. I'm interested in quality-made clothing. I'm interested in beautiful design. I'm interested in things that you want to know the story about, that have a story, that you want to share those stories and you want to hold on to and you want to mend and you want to keep. So that's the type of clothing I'm interested in. And maybe fashion isn't the right word anymore, but you can certainly be certain, very extremely stylish with all those criteria. It doesn't require trends or fast fashion in any case.
Well, Sass, I'd like to introduce you to a new term that I'd like to pursue, which is flourishing fashion. I've also gone on a journey from green fashion to sustainability to what I called gooder, and I've now landed in something that I call flourishing fashion, because both you and I still want to continue to purchase those beautiful garments that have been crafted in a different way than when we first met those many years ago. Flourishing fashion allows creation to happen in a triple P perspective, something that is both profitable as well as respect for people and planet. How do you see that going forward in terms of as an educator and as a fashion activist?
I actually love the term. I hadn't heard it used before until you mentioned it just earlier today. And I actually like it in many ways more than sustainable, because sustainable is about sustaining. It's not about growth. And growth can be problematic. Obviously, consumption is one of our greatest issues and all of the things that surround consumption, whether it's cheap clothing and the supply chain and the life cycle and the little value afforded cheap clothing and therefore how quickly it's discarded. So I actually really like that term, flourishing fashion. I think it has a positive connotation to growth as opposed to a negative connotation. But it also doesn't mean status quo and sustaining what we have. It does mean growth. So I actually really love that term. And I think there's so many possibilities. Obviously, triple bottom line, people, planet, etc., are absolutely vital for all of our businesses in every industry. We cannot, in good conscience, continue to produce anything without all of those concerns. We will experience limitations in some of our raw materials and the finances that encompasses, and you know, ever since Rana Plaza brought such high focus to the treatment of the workers in the supply chain of the fashion life cycle, it's, you know, we can no longer turn a blind eye to that kind of thing. Everybody in the supply chain of clothing must be considered, must be treated fairly, and that includes the environment. It's not there for us to trash. It's there for us to look after and to pass on, hopefully no worse than we found it.
Well, Sass, just recently I was on a CBR webinar that was focused on zero waste, and we were talking about closed loop. Do you think it's possible that fast fashion or fashion generally can be, versus product, can be closed looped?
I think there's really interesting things happening here. The general sort of assumption when you talk about how does fashion become more ethical, you tend to think of slow fashion because it involves people who are honored. It can honor artisanship and crafts. There are a lot of perspectives to slow fashion, and of course, that tends to be a higher priced product in the end if you are doing something slowly. Whether it's the weaving, the finishing, the sewing, etc., it tends to be on a smaller scale, so therefore the cost is higher. But there's been some interesting things. A conversation I was part of, or party to, with Becky Early, actually, from the Mistra Project, that she brought up in a conference I was at. What about disposable clothing? Why can't it be fast and completely biodegradable? Or be a nutrient in our garden, or any number of things. Why does it always have to be artisanship? And I'm a proponent of artisanship. It's part of my background, working in the developing world, and I have an enormous passion for it. But I do really like this idea also. I love that there are simultaneous conversations and different ways of coming at this. Why not something that's completely disposable? You wear it once and it becomes the raw material for something else. So hence closing the loop. I think that will be fab too.
I'm talking to Sass Brown of Eco Fashion Talk. On the Good or Goods podcast series, I try to, instead of talk climate change, be like the weather girl and tell consumers how they can purchase tomorrow, next season, or for the foreseeable future. I've spoke about darning and repurposing, as well as buying less. Do you have a suggestion, a workable suggestion, for someone who wants to make a purchase tomorrow?
I think, you know, there are so many options at this stage. No matter what your price point is, certainly there is handmade, they're supporting emerging local designers, whether it's as simple as, you know, the local market, weekend market that has any number of designers, makers selling their wares, to, yes, certainly vintage, to upcycling, free cycling. I've been to some great free cycling in the last couple of years where you know, a curated number of attendees with a certain sense of style bring the things that they no longer wear, not because they're worn out or not because of any other reason than they would like a change themselves. sells. And I've got some great items and certainly donated some great items that way. Flea markets, you know, all of those are issues. A colleague of mine and friend, Amy Default, did a project called the Tailors Project here in New York, where she went back through her wardrobe to find things she no longer wore because either she didn't like or they didn't fit or they were damaged, and took them to a local tailor in her geographic area who just recut them, redesigned them. So certainly the whole mending thing, I mean, when mending has almost become a revolutionary act, holding on to something and repairing it. The bag I have with me today is my favorite bag. It's by a designer in the UK called Tamara Fogel, who makes them out of vintage upcycled materials, and it's made out of a flour sack from the 1800s, and inevitably it's a little bit delicate sometimes, and I wear it day in, day out, year after year, and it is now so covered in my darning and patching to make its life longer. But that's part of the value of something that has a story and a history attached to it. It lived through being a farmer's flour sack. It had a pretty hard life before it became my bag. So what right do I have just to discard it because it gets a stain or it gets a haul? And it has a greater value than that. It was not an insignificant purchase to begin with. And so, you know, I almost consider it my responsibility to make it last longer. And it, by the time I've finished, it probably won't look anything like the original bag because I'm covering up all the graphics right now with my darning and my patching. But I'm still using it, and I think those stories are really valuable. And there's certainly ways of not having to purchase something, you know, embellishing it and continuing its life that isn't reliant upon having the finances to buy a big purchase item. They're all options.
Well, aside from the sweater that I'm wearing now, and it has to, it goes back quite a history with you and I. It's funny because the other day, someone had said to me, "You can't ever give up that sweater," and I certainly won't. It not only makes me think of you when you're here and I'm back in Canada, but also that it is something that I value. Part of flourishing fashion is understanding that the maker is in the middle of the system. It's no longer linear, but you are looking both or upstream in the inputs into the product as well as downstream post-consumer and towards the end of the product's life. So are there any care pieces of advice that you can share with people?
I think that, you know, I've always thought clothing has a value and it has a place. We all want to look prettier, nicer, more sophisticated, whatever. So I think that you certainly can care for your clothing, increase its longevity, help close the loop, upcycle it. I mean, there are things that you know, I've got tired of and I've gifted or I've shared with friends or I've upcycled, etc. Mended, changed, cut up, redesigned. There are just, you know, there are so many ways, I think, of continuing the life. There are some actually interesting designers around at the moment who, I mean, the sweater you're talking about is knitted, of course, who, again, because mostly of limited financial capability, instead of purchasing new yarn, purchase flea market knitwear that they then unravel and re-knit into their own designs. I mean, what a great way of continuing the life of the yarn, even once the sweater is finished. Some of my favorite pieces are pieces that have been visibly mended, particularly in knitwear, where there are patterns and colors and different yarns used to cover stains or to fill in where there are holes and runs. And I think all of that adds to the story and to the longevity of a piece.
Well, I know for myself, my choice to not dye my hair when I was pregnant with my first child, I recall a designer saying to me that, "Darling, you really need to do something about your hair." And I didn't, but I think that's personal confidence. I also realize that many consumers, they worry about, even today, wearing green with blue instead of in the washing machine, or some crazy notion about what what is fashion and what do we value? How is it that we give consumers that same confidence that perhaps you and I have just from our personal journey?
Yeah, I think probably both of our confidence or comfort in clothing and sophisticated style is a product of our experience to a great deal. Although that said, I probably felt just as confident at 21, but I was a bit bolder then.
Also in high heel shoes.
Oh God, yes, my style choices have changed somewhat since then, that's for sure. There was a time I did nothing in less than 6-inch heels, so those days have changed. I think that, you know, clothing is a very democratic thing in many ways. Everyone wears clothing, whether they're invested in the fashion system or they're not. And because of that close connection to it, everyone has a voice in it. Everyone has a stake in it to a degree. I think style is evolving, and I think part of that is your own personal style evolves through the years and through your experiences and is enriched by that. So I don't think it's necessarily problematic giving 21-year-old or a teenager the confidence at having a particular style, but it is having the comfort with experience of learning from your experiences, and how does that feed into your sense of style? It's certainly changed mine enormously.
Well, I know that one of the hardest dialogues I have is with young people who regularly tell me that they can only afford fast fashion. And I would challenge them that they're also the millennials who care the most about how their products are made. So if we have to evolve into our confident self, is there a shortcut that perhaps you might be able to share with to your students or to those listening to the Gooder Goods podcast?
I'm not sure about a shortcut. I mean, I think part of the issue is that everybody wants a quick solution. Is this good or is that bad? And things aren't that black and white or that simplistic. Being good and being ethical is an effort. You know, just as it is an effort to compost your food waste over throwing it into the trash, or always remembering to bring a reusable bag instead of taking the free plastic bags from the supermarket. All of that is an effort. It's the same thing with your clothing. There are lots of options and lots of alternatives out there, but it's not as simple as running into the high street fast fashion chain. It takes more time and more effort, whether it's going to flea markets, whether it's digging through the piles at a free cycle, or whether it's trading online or any of those things, they do take more effort. But that effort is also what gives it its value. So it's not as simple as a quick solution or a fast answer. And I think that's the problem. Ethics require effort in all of your life, from what you eat, where you eat, how you clothe yourself, etc. So there isn't a simple solution. And I think if you want to live by your ethics, then you have to be prepared to put that level of effort into it.
I'm talking to Sass Brown of Eco Fashion Talk. You can find a wealth of information on her blog at
www.ecofashiontalk. It's actually quite easy.
Thank you, Sass. It's so good to see you again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.
I believe you can fast-track your eco-fashion confidence by checking out Sass's blog or picking up her books, Eco-Fashion or Eco-Fashion 2, both available on the ecofashiontalk.com website. Like Bob Hunter, Sass is another influential social innovator for flourishing fashion. Social innovation is an idea that works for the public good. And like she said, we all wear clothes. And as we honored Bob Hunter last night, his widow, Bobby Hunter, said of her late husband that he was both charismatic and a humble man. He did not set out to create one of the most influential, world-changing organizations, but he was a true Canadian that wasn't looking for a pat on the back. You won't see Sass sporting a Canadian label pin, but I know her as a true Canadian who's creating social change for the greater good. Be gooder.
Follow me on Twitter at Gooder Goods. The links I referenced can be found on Facebook. Search Gooder Goods. And the podcast is uploaded on soundcloud.com/goodergoods. Choose to be gooder.